Excellent. I love it when technology works. So seldom does it for me. Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you so much for being here for this presentation. My presentation will be a bit different from Deepa's, of course. Hers is much more direct, one-on-one, and but I think what she was talking about was a need for some systemic changes, and I hope that I'm able to address that to some small degree here. Again, my name is Michelle Hirsch. I'm with the Office on Women's Health in the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I work in Region 5, which is in Chicago, and I work with the 6 states of the Great Lakes. I also have nothing to disclose, as do so many of us with the federal government. At the Office on Women's Health, we were established in 1991, and we are celebrating our 20th anniversary this year. About 10 years after the establishment of the office, we changed our mission and our focus to also include girls, a logical progression, I might add. And we're the focal point for women's health activities in the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. Our vision as an office are that all women and girls are healthier and have a better sense of well-being. And we try to, the mission, and we try to achieve our vision through providing leadership to promote health equity for women and girls through sex and gender-specific approaches. What I want to talk about today is what I've spent a tremendous amount of time over the past number of years focusing on, which is the impact of trauma on women and girls. And so I think it's probably worthwhile, probably I'm preaching to the choir on this, but I'll move through it quickly, about what trauma really is, or what we're talking about in this particular context. And that is, a traumatic event is one that, when a person a person experiences either a violent situation or feels very threatened, and the event could be something along the lines of abuse, any kind of neglect, institutionalization, diseases, war, and so on. You understand what I'm getting at here. And these particularly violent events where this person feels threatened, the experiences overwhelm their internal and external ability to cope. So women in particular experience trauma very differently than men do. Our reactions are different. Who traumatizes us as women are very different overwhelmingly than the experiences of men. And women don't just leave that trauma when they go out in the world. They carry it with them all the time, and it has a profound impact on their everyday lives. And despite the impact trauma has on the health of women and girls, it's rarely considered when women seek services, either health or social services. Some of the foundational research, the real sentinel research related to trauma addresses is from the ACE study, the Adverse Childhood Experience Study, or ACE study, and that was done by Dr. Vince Folletti out of Kaiser Permanente. It's a study that analyzes the relationship between exposure to adverse childhood experiences and health and behavioral outcomes later in life. There were over 17,000 participants in the study, overwhelmingly middle class, and so we can't just say that trauma is disproportionately a function of poverty. Certainly it contributes to poverty, and poverty contributes to exposure to trauma, but we can't say that they're directly related, or that that trauma is only experienced or overwhelmingly experienced by those in lower socioeconomic classes. And the ACE study is an ongoing collaboration between the CDC and Kaiser Permanente. So what's an ACE? And I won't go through all of them so you can read them easily, but you can see that it's an event that happens in one's life prior to the age of 18. And you get an ACE score based on exposure of any of these, or all of these in some cases. And it's not how many times it happens, but just that particular event happened in your life. So if it's contact sexual abuse or having an adult in the home who is a drug or alcohol abuser, or if a mother is treated violently and so on. So it's not how many times that event happens, but that, in fact, there is that exposure. And you can see the relationship. The exposure to ACEs then change one's social, emotional, and cognitive impairment and development. You see that very clearly in brain scans of children who've been exposed to traumatic experiences. Their brain development is changed. The connectivity, the activity in the brain is different than those of children who don't have particularly exposure to multiple ACEs. It's not the one ACE, the exposure to one adverse childhood experience, because truly that would be the vast majority of the population. We're talking about compound trauma, multiple exposures. So the exposure to the ACE changes you at a social, emotional, and cognitive impairment, creates cognitive impairment. As a function of the cognitive impairment, you adopt health risk behaviors at a higher level, which then, of course, leads to disease, disability, and social programs problems. I'm going to talk about programs. This causes problems. And then ultimately, potentially early death. All makes pretty good sense, right? Specific outcomes of exposures to ACEs are what's really telling. And it's dramatic, and so I'll move through a few slides just to give you an idea. And for those of you who have not read the ACE study, I strongly encourage you to do it. If you just Google ACE, you'll come up with Vince Folletti, Robert Anda, and a number of other researchers who've been working on this. Take a chance, take the opportunity to read the first study and a few of the subsequent ones. And you'll I think it's really kind of a mind expansion to see how profoundly impacting these exposures are. Compared to a person with an ACE score of 0, and again, that's an ACE score of 0 or an ACE score of 1 or 2 is not at all uncommon, but compared to an individual with an ACE score of 0, an individual with an ACE score of 4 is 460% more likely to suffer from depression. And that's not a typo. We're really talking about 460%. That's really profound. Somebody with, again, the ACE score of 0 compared to a 4, person with an ACE score of 4 is 260% more likely to have COPD, 250% more likely to have sexually transmitted disease, and roughly 80% of all suicides can be attributed to an ACE to exposure to childhood trauma. So how common are these ACEs? Just plucking one of them, for example, 16% of men and 25% of women reported being sexually abused as children. 25% of respondents had an ACE score of 1, and about 6.25% had an ACE score of 4. And just, I'm a very visual person, so I like to represent things graphically. You can see on the left, relationship with ACE score and alcoholism. On the right, ACE score and illicit drugs, and you see the dramatic stepwise increase. Risk of depression in adult women with higher ACE scores, again, dramatic. Heart disease, and you start thinking heart disease, and then you have to kind of look back down the levels, the progressive levels of the pyramid, to think about, okay, risky behaviors and so on would obviously contribute to the development of diseases. I mean, you can see the relationship with, it's a little more clear to conceptualize the relationship with mental illness, depression, drug use, risky sexual behavior, but heart disease and COPD. But it really, truly, exposure to early trauma changes you at a cellular level. And as such, you are at greater risk. And this is smoking, again, huge risk factor. Injected drug use. Oh, let me back up for 1 second. At the bottom, you'll see that if you have a male with an ACE score of 6 or more, has a 4,600% increased risk of later using IV drugs. So the prevention opportunities are enormous here. So what are we doing focusing on trauma? Our vision is to equip all health and social service providers across the country with the necessary information they need to understand trauma, because nobody talks about it. It's amazing to me. I talk to social workers, healthcare providers, even social workers, and they're not even familiar with the concept of an ACE. So the idea is to, one, raise their awareness. Two, if we get that group of people who's really interested, to have them adopt trauma-informed care behaviors. And ultimately, with that small fraction at this point, we're not trying to aim too broadly with this, but ultimately to those who are capable and ready to invest the effort to conduct a certain amount of screening, as long as there are resources available and they're able to refer and provide good treatment. So I want to also point out there are a couple of people in the audience, Erica Abogales and Michelle Ashley, who are back there, who are interns of mine who have worked on this. And it's because of the work of so many interns and so many staff in my office that we've been able to really start moving the needle in terms of some of the efforts of our office to address the impact of trauma. So the early work, I started focusing on work with women in prisons and to provide gender-responsive, trauma-informed care for the providers of care and services in the prison. That quickly turned into recognizing that almost every woman in prison has a substance abuse history, and when you peel back the layer of that onion, you realize it's because they're self-medicating because of a trauma history. And then we started to do some trainings and had Stephanie Covington, who many of you may be familiar with, came to town to do a training with the people from the prisons. And so we thought we'd open it up to the general public. And 2 hours after we sent out the save the date, saying we're going to have a session focusing on the impact of trauma on women and girls, we were oversubscribed. And so we had to move to a bigger room. 2 days later, we had overfilled that room and we needed to move to yet another space. So we recognize that this is a tremendous unmet need. Providers are seeing this, but they're really not being equipped to deal with it. They know what they're seeing. They know that there must be ways to deal with this, but they're just not getting the training in their professional education. So regardless of the field of practice that you're in, whether you know it or not as a provider, a substantial portion of your clients or your patients have trauma histories. And whether you provide them if you have trauma-informed practices, you either have the potential, if you don't have trauma-informed practices, of re-traumatizing them and potentially never seeing them again, or creating a therapeutic relationship. The key concept, if you walk away with nothing else from this presentation, what I'd really like you to think of is when you think about trauma-informed care, it's a cognitive shift from what's wrong with you, like a provider saying to a patient, what's wrong with you? Why does this keep happening, or what's the matter with you, to what happened to you? One of the ways we're trying to convey this information is through a trauma webinar series called The Impact of Trauma on Women and Girls. It's a partnership with SAMHSA. They have generously supported the platform that we're working on. The series launched a year ago tomorrow, I guess, looking at that date. And we've reached over 15,000 individuals through the live presentation and archived versions. They're absolutely free and overwhelmingly popular because they go across all different silos. It's not a siloed approach. They go across all different professions and disciplines. We've had Dr. Vince Folletti present. We've had Stephanie Covington talk about gender-responsive trauma-informed care. We've had a presentation by Cynthia Rasmussen focusing on active duty and military. And we had Rosalind Wiseman, who you may be familiar with from the movie Mean Girls, that was based on her book. And she was talking about bullying and the repercussions on girls' futures. All of these webinars are available via archive. Those are just a sampling of the ones that we've had so far. And we have this series every single month. So should you be interested, you can certainly contact Emma Winter at emma.winter@hhs.gov to be added to the announce list for these. Again, they're free. And I encourage all of you, because it really is a terrific opportunity to learn a great deal. It's free. It's convenient. What we're hoping to do in our work is to get providers to adopt a universal precautions approach, which is to presume that every person who walks through your door has been exposed to violence, abuse, neglect, or some other traumatic experience. Doing that doesn't hurt anybody who hasn't been. It just makes you more of a trauma-informed provider. We also do a lot of work with people who work with trauma experiences. For example, rape crisis centers, people who work in ERs, people who work with HIV, and so on. Once a year we have a program called Trauma Stewardship. And if you're not familiar with the concept but do work with populations and feel like you might be experiencing a certain amount of vicarious trauma, check into Laura Vandernoot Lipsky's book called Trauma Stewardship. In a month from now, we're having an event here in D.C. It's the second one of the Trauma Roundtable. It's interdepartmental, and the purpose of which is to raise awareness and the common knowledge base among federal partners and collaborators about the prevalence and behavioral impact and health impact of exposure to trauma. And we were able to identify a reason why every single federal department should have a role in this. Everyone from education, labor, justice, health and human services, you name it. We have representation among all of those departments, because what we want to do is raise awareness and get trauma in the forefront so policies and funding opportunities are trauma-informed, and that's taken into consideration when they write funding opportunities and policy. Our last year's event roundtable produced this monograph, Women in Trauma. And as I said, the next one is coming up in December of this year in the Department of Justice in the Great Hall. We also are doing some work on incarcerated women's reentry. This Friday, we'll be working with a group, an advisory committee, that is looking at the issues and all the multiple myriad needs of women as they transition back into the community. And we're working on a framework that will contribute to a national summit in the spring. And the reason you may say, what's the relationship between reentry, incarcerated women, and trauma? I think I mentioned earlier that incarcerated women have an overwhelming trauma histories. And finally, one of the activities that we're just about to start, we've been working on for quite some time, is to provide trainings in the context of academic institutions, hospitals, and community clinics, focusing on providing trauma-informed care. And I'm partnering with Dr. Sheila Raja, who is a professor at the University of Illinois in Chicago. We're going to start by providing grand rounds with using whatever hooks we need to with providers, everything from providing better care, potential for better outcomes, less opportunity of getting sued, and the like, to get them to understand the role the trauma plays in the health and well-being of their patients. And then ultimately, we'll invite them to, those who are interested, we'll invite to a half-day training where we get into greater detail. We're going to start that in Chicago and move out across the region. Just for those of you who may be interested in learning a little bit more about the impact of trauma, the National Child Traumatic Stress Network is an outstanding resource. The CDC funds the ACE study, and go to CDC and type in ACE for a search and you'll find a great deal of information. The Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration has the Center for Trauma-Informed Care, and of course my office, the Office on Women's Health. And I thank you for your kind attention and would be happy to answer any questions should you have some. I know I covered a lot in a short period.